Hello, ladies and gentlemen. We are here with another installment of the Best of Cairo Nights. This is the producer, Sugar Shane Peterson here. I'm here at the board. Lisa's in the newsroom. And Jack, he has the night off. So we're just going to give you, you know, some old stuff. Some stuff that's good. Some oldies, but some goodies. And this one is from the 19th of last month. And this is from when Cairo's own Sherry Elicker came in to talk about the arts and tax dollars.
Sherry Elicker, co-host the John Curley Sherry Elicker Experience, soon with haptic feedback. Sherry, do you have a thing that you're like obsessed with? Do you have like a thing that you just can't like a thing that you look at the internet, like, I don't know, like Russian nesting dolls or like pottery? Is there like a hobby that you have that you just have an obsession with?
Yeah, it's a little broad though, so I can't come up with one particular thing, but I love decorating, and I will spend an inordinate amount of time finding the perfect, I mean, pick it, like a candle, like a little box or something like that puts in one place in my house. And I'll search on all these different websites and then send things to my friends. Which one do you like? And I mean, it could be the smallest thing. So yeah, I do get a little obsessed with home decor.
I like this. I like this a lot. I have an obsession with vintage guitars, like vintage Gibson, Fender. And so I found a vintage Gibson guitar that I would like to purchase. But the guy that I am communicating with doesn't realize that the value of the guitar is not. So he's doing this thing that sometimes people do where they're like, yeah, I got a 1986 Jeep Wrangler, all original condition. This thing's worth like $60,000, man. This is vintage. he's doing that thing where I'm like, guy, listen, you have a really, really sweet Les Paul. It needs a lot of work, and I'm going to have to put a ton of money into it. It is not the golden goose egg that you think that it is. You're not going to be able to retire on this. I have to send it to somebody. I have to pay to get it fixed. I have to pay to get it refinished. I have to pay to get the pickups set back up again. It is not this like miraculous, like, we're going to Vegas thing that you have on your hands. I will take it off of you for a fair price, and I will fix it, but I will not pay like three times what the list price is on this just because you think it's worth a lot of money. And so now I'm haggling with this guy, trying to explain to him that what he thinks is valuable is not actually as valuable as he thinks that it is. Now, I say that story, Sherry, to say this. The mayor of Seattle has decided that he thinks that he will have this new initiative to help the arts recover post-COVID-19. And I wish that I could speak to Mayor Harrell and tell him that what he thinks is valuable in terms of investments in the community is not actually valuable. Does that make sense? Like, thinking that you put murals all over the place is going to fix crime is not going to happen. Do you know what I mean?
I agree. Does he think that the arts community, is he talking about public space art, or is he talking about investing in things like galleries and the arts community in terms of fostering new artists and artistic, you know, making Seattle a hub for art?
He's,
it's two different things.
Right. He's talking about the whole cabal. So everything that you just described, that's what the mayor is talking about. So this article in the Seattle Times starts out by saying, Mayor Bruce Harrell, elected in the second year of the COVID-19 pandemic, inherited obstacles unknown to his predecessors, many of them pertaining to Seattle's arts and culture sector. And I go, you know, Seattle's got a lot of problems. The surrounding areas have a lot of problems. I would not have thought that the arts and culture sector is really where a mayor needs to put their focus. Goes on to say, Harrell's administration is charged not only with helping the arts community regain its footing after pandemic closures, but also addressing ongoing issues of how artists and arts organizations can thrive in an increasingly expensive city, all while appointing permanent city leadership in the arts. And I just go like, what is Grace Gorfino or Gorinflo, the author of this? What is she trying to convey to me other than like severe ignorance about what is going on in this city? Right. Like other than like just like you, like, there are people who are literally rotting and dying in the street, and now you, in this very flowery language, you're talking about how the mayor needs to have grants, more money going to arts and culture, when, like, literally there are 15-year-olds who are overdosing on fentanyl and dying on buses. But, like, hey, we need a mural downtown. Do you, am I being too cynical, Sherry, the day before my vacation? Am I being too too cynical about this?
No, but, you know, I do love the arts. And my favorite quote from Picasso is, art washes from the soul the dust of everyday life.
Wow.
And so I would think, and I agree with you, when you've got all of these other issues that are so dramatic and big and terrible, the idea that you're worried about art, or you're worried about, you know, some kind of a program, or, you know, promoting a new graffiti artist seems frivolous. But
right, yeah.
But I think that the arts, and art is important in terms of it does do something to us, or it does, I think, help us as humans. And so it might be, and I don't know, because I'm not his communications director, but it might very much be that what he's trying to do is accentuate some of the positive that could still be going on in Seattle. Because right now the focus is all dark, and it's all bad, and it's all negative. And so if you can start to build on some of the other things, you know, music, art, those things, even though they're not necessarily public safety priorities, but they might be more, forgive me, you're going to groan, human priorities. Where I know. I have a friend who lives in Santa Cruz, California, and she and they have the same kind of program that they're having in Seattle, where they took these storefronts that are right downtown that were vacant, and they allowed people to rent them for very cheap or for nothing to start to put art, you know, art installations and things in there. So she always wanted to run an art gallery. And because of this program, she's able to run a 4,000 square foot art gallery and bring in new artists and promote it. And it helps the street. And it's been kind of amazing. Like, people have, you know, started to come to the gallery openings that they have, and there's a new interest in it. So there might be some value to it. And I'm wondering if these things can happen simultaneously. Remember what he said in his inauguration speech. I believe it was that Seattle can be the land of and, that we can do this and do this and
yes,
do this.
Right.
So that might be the strategy behind this, that we can, you know, battle all of the ills and still try to promote something that's positive, that fulfills some aesthetic need in us.
Bruce,
am I being too Pollyanna-ish?
Yeah.
You could say yes.
No, I'm saying Bruce Harrell, master at improvisation. Well, okay, I see that perspective, and I want to validate that. We sound like we're in couples therapy right now. I see that perspective. I want to validate that perspective and say yes. And if I'm the mayor of Seattle, I have a lot of clout, right? I'm going to dinners, mm-hmm. I'm shaking hands, I'm hanging out with, you know, I'm rubbing elbows with the hoo-hoo of the Seattle elite, right? Why not do this? Why not do this thing where you're rubbing elbows with some of the elites in King County and say, listen, I need you to donate money so that I can put up murals and have art galleries and stuff like that, because I really want to get art back into the city. Why do that as opposed to using taxpayer dollars? Because as an example, since 2018, Seattle has had a 5% tax on event admissions charges, 100% of which is used to help fund the office's grant programs, facilities, cultural space programs, and art education work. Again, this is from the Seattle Times. This seems to me like an unnecessary expenditure. And I'm not trying to come down like a curmudgeon or something like that and saying we should just have blank concrete walls all over the place and wear gray clothing everywhere we go, like some kind of dystopia. What I'm saying is that there's like a way to facilitate this organically, or there's a way to facilitate this without being so hands-on. I would rather see the mayor doing mayoral things in terms of policing and fire departments and parks and sweeps and homelessness and all that other stuff, rather than him doing this like weird kind of this kind of like elitist nod to arts and culture. Again, I'm not trying to come down on it in that way, but there's a lot of problems. As you point out, it's really dark. It's really bleak. We're hearing about fentanyl overdoses on a regular basis. You have a slew of activist judges out there that are letting criminals back out onto the streets. And when I read stuff like this, Sherry, it doesn't make me think, wow. It doesn't make me think great. It almost reinforces or highlights what I think is wrong with the city, which is this attempt to ignore all of these ugly parts about it that desperately need attention. And yet you have the mayor saying, that he's got his priorities and he's confident in the director of the position to be able to look into this. But I just think to myself, why not be the mayor of like big pieces first and then like little pieces next? You know, big chunks need to be dealt with, and why focus on the arts is my whole position, Sherry. And you can tell me if I'm being, again, this is, I'm being a negative Nancy because of my vacation status.
No, I think you're right, and I think most people agree with you. Most people believe that if there's money to be spent, it should be spent on some of these unbearable problems that the city is facing. I also think that the mayor's position is probably that he can do both. That if you only focus on those things, then that becomes, you know, it just becomes sort of a constant reminder that that's all Seattle is. It's all crime. It's all homelessness. Yeah. It's all drug abuse. It's all of those things. So to try to add something into the mix and say, wait a minute, there still is room for music and arts and drama and good things. The word we may be looking for here is balance. And it's tough to get people to donate money sometimes for programs that they feel aren't going to really show results, right? Like how do you measure it? That's the thing. If you go to somebody and say, hey, I want to start this arts program, you know, will you give me $5,000 so a kid can paint a mural? For what? I'd rather give you $5,000 so a kid can go to, you know, a semester of, well,
exactly,
a semester of college. It'd be like 2 weeks of college, but you know, so I guess that's the whole thing is, what are the priorities? How do you balance them out? And is there value in promoting those kinds of intangible things, like the arts and trying to get people to become involved and think of Seattle as an art place, as a hub, as a place to think, just like Seattle is famous for its music, could it now be famous for its arts? So it's got a long way to go.
Yeah.
But, I suppose anything is possible.
Well, I'll give you an example why I think that this is kind of a waste, if you will. Jason Rance wrote about this last week, but I think it's relevant given the circumstances. So he's talking about Patrice Cullors, who is one of the founding members of BLM, and she did a one-week residency at the Vashon Center for Arts. And I at one time in my life, actually applied for an art residency in film. I didn't get it, but I understand why people try to do stuff like this. It's so you can get paid to go into a space and make multiple pieces of art. She had 7 days, right, to make a piece of art. And then the thing that she actually produced, the thing that she actually spent a week designing to the cost of around $7,000, is a neon sign that reads "Abolition is," and then three dots after it. And that's it. And she didn't even make it. It was outsourced to a guy at Western Neon. His name is Dylan Newworth. And he actually made it. But Patrice Cullors allegedly created and designed it. And then it was Newworth who brought forth her vision. But it just seems like the state spends, or rather the Vashon Island residency, was a $7,000 event. And the one thing that is produced is a neon sign that is about the size of my Pomeranian that says "Abolition is." And so when I see stuff like that, Sherry, it just like gets under my skin. skin. You know what I mean? It just gets right to my core, and I go, what a waste. You know, it's just such a waste of everybody's time.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, in the eye of the beholder, right? I mean, that's the thing about art.
Yeah.
You know, they did this great study one time where they had these art experts come in, and they presented them with this guy that they said was, you know, from some far-flung place, some very exotic place, and this is an up-and-coming person, and what do you think? And they just poured over it and said, you know, this is great. The color is unbelievable. And, you know, and the contextual stuff and this and this and this and this. Anyway, then they revealed it was a 4-year-old that had done all the abstract art. You know, art can be argued all the time about value or, you know, what is this worth or what does it mean to you? Or is it really beautiful or is it just a bunch of junk? I think Patrice Cullors is probably not a great example of money well spent in many, many ways, just because of how much money has been spent in terms of, you know, Black Lives Matters and the lack of accountability with all of that. But yeah, I mean, I'm not sure, you know, what the mayor has in mind or what the plan is. You know that it won't be aesthetically pleasing to everybody, whatever comes out of all of this, whatever the murals are, whatever, if there's public spaces that are being painted or this and this and this. But it might help to beautify things, something, you know, I mean, it might uplift people. It might do something. Am I defending this too much?
No, I appreciate your positivity, Sherry. And it's desperately needed in this day and age where Jack Stein is clinically burnt out and desperately needs to go on vacation and is suffering from severe depression and has no dopamine left in his body. Not a single dopamine, Sherry, not
well,
one.
You know, you are going to have the time of your life.
Yep.
The sunshine and the mountains and the cool ocean breeze and the blue skies and all of that will refresh your entire being. So I am jealous beyond words that you get to go and have this great vacation when I'm stuck here on the East Coast, the cold and rainy East Coast right now.
Sherry, you're the best, and I'll talk to you when I get back from vacation. Appreciate it.
Had the best time ever, Jack.
Wow. Love Sherry. Sherry's great. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back with Dr. Z coming up right after this.
Hello, everyone. We are still here with the Best of Cairo Nights, and we've got a little bit of a throwback here from last month with the Cairo traffic god, Chris Sullivan, talking about a pair of drivers that got arrested for a road rage incident right down at Pike Place Market.
Man, I am feeling beyond tired, and I am feeling beyond just burnt out right now. I wonder if there's something out there, some kind of force that can will me through the next 2.5 hours of my radio program. Some kind of being that can answer my prayers. Some kind of golden Fabio-like god with 36-inch biceps and a 48-inch vertical leap, 8-pack abs and calf muscles for miles. Why, it's Chris Sullivan, traffic god, entering the studio. Wow, Chris Sullivan, unbelievable. Greasy, dripping with testosterone.
You have no idea how hard it is to have 8-pack abs.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's difficult.
Wow, Chris. You're
do them by, I get them by doing 6-minute abs, by the way. Not 7-minute abs, but 6-minute abs. That's where I get them.
Do you remember that? That's like a mid-2000s meme where like there was always like 15 minutes to be shredded, 6-minute abs. And like people would buy those VHS tapes or those DVDs in an effort to look like, you know, remember Billy Blank? And Tybo and all that other stuff. Do you remember?
Hey, I did Tybo in my living room. It was awesome. How do you think I got this way?
Just exclusively Tybo.
Yeah. And then, you know, the thing about the 6-pack abs was that was also from what? Something About Mary? And then one of the hitchhikers he picked up, he was like, no, not 7-minute abs, 6-minute abs. It's like, okay, or something like that. Yeah. Anyway,
speaking of throwing punches, by the way, Chris Sullivan, there was a road rage incident down at Pike Place, and it seems like it was just like an all out brawl. So It involves two men, 32-year-old guy driving an SUV, and then a 45-year-old in a van. I guess the 32-year-old guy is trying to turn onto First Avenue along Pike Place Market. And then the driver of the van threw water towards the 32-year-old, which is always like, you know, if you're going to do anything, you do the squid technique, right? You just throw water in somebody's face. And then they got out of the cars to confront each other. The 32-year-old shoves the 45-year-old to the ground, gets back in his car. Then the 45-year-old ran up to the SUV, hit the driver. He gets back in his van. A 54-year-old guy says, "I got to mix it up." So apparently John Curley was down by Pike Place this afternoon. Says, "Hey, I got to go mix it up." So then he's in a Mazda, pulls up to the driver in the SUV. They have a verbal altercation. He gets out of the car with a hammer, shatters the SUV's back window. 32-year-old guy grabs the hammer as well. It just seems like it was a total nightmare. And my question is, Chris Sullivan, why is society like this, and why do we hate each other so much? I just don't understand how there can be so much rage in the world over like cars. Do you know what I mean?
You can kind of understand the two guys at the beginning.
Yes.
You know, drawn over this. Yeah. You know, they're the ones who are having an argument over who is pulling into Pike Place, right? To go down the little tiny street that probably shouldn't have cars on it anyway, but we can get to that in a minute.
Right.
But it's the third dude. It's the third dude who saw this and then decided, "I'm going to get involved." Why? What is the third dude doing? I mean, yeah. The first two, you kind of go, oh, they cut each other off. They had words. He threw water. Probably not a good idea. Blah, blah, blah. They're moving on. But it's the third guy that escalates this into a hammer match. And then he backs away and runs over an innocent bystander. I mean, what are you doing? That just doesn't make any sense to me, that the third person doesn't think there's enough testosterone going around and decides to just jump in with a hammer. Yeah, this one is, I don't get it. I don't get it at all. But the person who sees something and then wants to get involved, like, you know, like you're 15 again and you want to, you know, get in a free punch when two guys are grappling. I don't get it.
Okay.
This is odd.
So hammer match is my new favorite phrase.
Good.
Hammer match.
Why do people turn down? That should really be closed off, right, Chris? I mean, in Pike Place, that road, it should not exist, right? That should be solely human beings walking, no vehicles whatsoever. Yeah,
I mean, that's been an argument ever since the market opened 100 years ago.
Right.
I mean, people have been talking about this. I mean, I understand people wanting to get in there, tourists, and, you know, doing things, but there are plenty of opportunities to, you know, catch an Uber or a bus there and just walk in. I understand delivery trucks, you know, the people delivering stuff are setting up in the market. But yeah, it probably makes sense at this day and age that this has become such an icon in Seattle and a place everybody goes to watch the dudes throw the fish.
Yeah.
Whether it's fun or not. They go down there and they see that. Here I am poo-pooing on a Seattle staple.
It's stupid. Chris, I'll do it with you. It's stupid.
It's kind of silly.
They throw in fish.
Yeah,
come on.
Any visiting team comes to town and immediately they go to Pike Place to show it on their home broadcast. Hey, we threw it, caught some fish.
Hey.
Great. But yeah, it probably should be off limits to anybody but pedestrians. I mean, it just makes sense this day and age, considering how many people are down there. I mean, we've got an all cross crosswalk there, which I love at First Ave, where the pedestrians get a signal, lingo, whatever the hell they want to.
Yeah.
I think that's a great thing. I want them to expand that, give the pedestrians their own lights so that they're not causing problems for people trying to take free right turns on green lights for cars. I think that would help us move things, but that's another discussion.
Well, okay, and I think that, like, I have been in circumstances where other people have been road raging at me, but rarely have I road raged at another human being. And I find all too often that the road rage escalation is I have never heard a road rage story that ends well. I have never heard a road rage story where I go, "Hey, wow, what a fun and uplifting story." Do you know what I mean? It's like one of those things that's kind of universally, we all frown upon it, and yet people still engage in it. They still roll down their window, yell at each other, throw hammers at each other, throw waters in somebody's face. It just seems like, why can't we move past this as a society is what I'm asking everybody. Can we please just like grow up and move past this?
Well, I mean, even when people pull, or, you know, cut me off or do things over, I used to just like raise my hand in the air like, oh man, are you kidding me?
Right.
I don't even do that anymore because the person might be looking in the rearview mirror. And we've had a spate of shootings on the freeway involving road rage this year, innocent bystanders as well. I mean, we had a very famous one a couple of years ago involving a motorcyclist and a car that ended up in a shooting down as you worked your way towards Fife. I mean, it's I don't get it. I mean, I understand. I mean, I don't know. Maybe at the end of the day, dudes are just dumb. We are. And we just testosterone takes over and we lose our minds. But yeah, you just nothing good comes of these things. I mean, just let it go. You just got to let it go.
Yeah.
Or else we end up with things like this. And, you know, we've got a hammer fight and an innocent bystander gets run over. I mean, it makes no sense to me at all.
Yeah. And then I think, you know, in the last 30 seconds that we have, Chris, like one of the things I try to remind myself of, I don't have kids, but I've got a Pomeranian. So I whenever I'm driving, I always think to myself, am I driving in a way that would keep my Pomeranian safe? Do you know what I mean? I know that's like corny or whatever, but that's like, well, I don't speed. I don't cut corners. I don't flip people off. You know what I mean? I try to drive because I love my Pomeranian so much. I try to drive like I'm giving my Pomeranian a nice comfy ride. That's what I'm saying, Chris Sullivan.
Well, I mean, you treat the Pomeranian like we treated our child Tommy.
Yeah.
I mean, it is what it is, and you don't want anything bad to happen. That's why I always say the reverse. When somebody else does something to you on the roads and you're thinking about anything, just pretend the person in the other car is your mother.
Yes.
And then what would you do?
I'd probably ram
that car. I guarantee you're not riding your ass on the bumper and flipping her off.
I would.
But I mean, you're in California.
Yeah, exactly. Chris Sullivan, listen, you're the best. I appreciate you, boss. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back with Of Two Minds right after this.
We are done with our number one, and we still got two more to go with this installment of the Best of Cairo Nights. But this is from about a month ago. This is where me and Jack talk about a Washington school district that awarded middle schoolers $2,000 for a student drag show.
Shane, I have two thoughts. Two thoughts about drag shows. So in Whatcom County, there is a middle school. Whatcom Middle School. And so basically, Bellingham Public Schools held a contest called Think Big, where a group of judges awarded up to $2,500 in funds to club leaders pitching innovative ideas using the funds. And the problem with this, my good friend Shane, is that the group that won these funds wants to put on a drag show. Now, is this a good idea? I don't think so. It is a student drag show. Shane, have you ever been to a drag show ever in your life?
Mm-hmm. I have been to a few. I've actually, for my college radio station, I worked two different drag shows. It was
very cool.
I had quite a good time. It was entertaining.
So let's be big brain nuanced about this, Shane, mm-hmm. and confirm what you and I both know. Drag shows are not always sexual in nature. Sometimes they're just like fashion shows or glam shows or something like that, correct?
Yeah, and it's mostly just a lot of lip syncing and dancing, you know? And the thing is when people think about drag, I went to one of the drag shows that I worked. There was a girl who decided to do a tribute to Freddie Mercury. So she dressed up like Freddie Mercury, drew on the mustache.
Right.
You know, it wasn't anything, you know, sexual in nature. It was just her going up and singing, "I Want to Break Free." And, you know, it's you know, it wasn't anything too crazy. But, you know, there are some shows where they like to, you know, strut their stuff and, you know, put on a little bit of a persona. And that can be a little bit of a little bit of a weird thing when it comes to kids.
That's exactly my point, is that so drag shows, I've been to several, they are not always intrinsically sexual in nature. oftentimes it is lip syncing. Oftentimes it is, you know, that kind of a vibe, or it's like a fashion show or something like that. The problem with that is, Shane, is that not everybody is as maybe cosmopolitan or worldly as you and I. So not everybody knows that. And so when you have a quote unquote student drag show, what are people going to think about that? Now, this is the Gender Sexuality Alliance Club, the GSA. Now, when I was in high school and in college, it was called the Gay Straight Alliance.
Mm-hmm,
but I guess this is what they have in Whatcom County. This is going to push a lot of people the wrong way. And in this era of heightened rhetoric and the Don't Say Gay bill and the conflicting narratives about that particular bill, if I could have spoken to the people at Whatcom Middle School, I would be like, what are you thinking? What is wrong with you? Do you know how heightened everybody is on this particular issue? You couldn't have called it a costume lip-syncing competition or just a glam show or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. You had to allow the students to call it a quote-unquote student drag show. Are you out of your mind? Are you that stupid? And I realize that I'm not supposed to be calling people names, but how stupid do you have to be in 2022, the era of anti-trans rhetoric or anti-gay rhetoric with the Don't Say Gay bill and people being so upset about gender studies going on in middle school? And how stupid do you have to be to say, oh yeah, let's have ourselves a drag/talent show, and won't that be so great, and we'll put up anti-bullying posters and campaigns and so on and so forth? This is like, I understand the spirit behind it, and this is why I'm of two minds about it. I get it. I understand it. I've been to drag shows. 99.9% of people on God's green earth have not been to a drag show. They do not understand that it is often a completely non-sexual event. They don't even know that it's not always they don't even know that straight guys can do drag.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean, Shane? Like in most people's minds, because most people don't read books, when they hear drag or they see drag, what do they think? They think transgender. They think, you know, whatever it is they want to think about it. They don't think of drag as being a separate entity of queerness or of expression. And this is my contention with this. And this is my contention with Whatcom Middle School. Do I necessarily care if kids dress up as various characters and sing songs? No, I don't care at all. They could do Oklahoma. They could do Guys and Dolls. You could have a lady dressed up like Freddie Mercury singing I Want to Break Free. To call it a drag show is inviting scorn and ire that is undeserved of the event, and that's why I'm of two minds about it, Shane. It's stupid.
Yeah.
It's dumb.
Yeah, and also, to continue with the whole idea with the bad press, I mean, it was only like a year or two ago that the person who discovered that drag queen story time got locked up for child pornography charges.
Exactly.
So, you know,
exactly.
There's already people who have already given it a bad name. And even though it is it's a completely out of fun, you know, out of entertainment and expression type of event. But it's it is weird. But, you know, it's kind of like the same thing. You know, they could have called it a different name, Jack. But at the end of the day, it's still the same thing. So, you know, it's an interesting issue. But, you know, I hope
it gets
settled out
the
right
way. That's the point that I'm trying to make, Shane, is that they could have called it a glam show and nobody would have batted an eye. They could have called it anything else. They could have called it, I don't know, an Eggo waffle dance competition and nobody would have batted an eye.
Yeah,
like, hey, come on down.
They could call it anything they want, but as soon as anybody in the right-wing media finds out about it, it's just going to be blown out of proportion and put them as a target for people who don't think
right. You call it
a
costume party. You call it whatever you want to. You call it a drag show. People are going to think it's filled with perverts, and it's going to continue this narrative of woke school districts, blah, 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 blah. And it's just not very smart. Hey, speaking of not very smart, by the way, Billy Sunshine dropping by in a couple of few to talk about Joe Biden's just dismal, dismal, dismal polling numbers and why CNN Plus is probably going to be done. We'll be right back right after this.